This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Green light, 3-0, and she's gone!
And welcome to the 3-0 show. Oh no, that sounded a little bit like... That is not where I was going with that. But anyway, welcome to the 3-0 show, proud part of the Athletic Baseball Show, and also proud today to kick off a new segment at the Athletic Baseball Show where we're going to preview every division by division. And today we start with the AL West, which makes sense to bring on the illustrious Katie Wu. She's you know, in the Central, but we love your insights across the league. And how is it going for you right now out in Jupiter?
Indeed, thanks, Eno. It was a crisp like 87 degrees today. I know prior to recording you heard me express some dismay about the tan lines I've been developing. For those of you who have never experienced a lanyard tan line, consider yourself blessed. It's a very unbecoming trait. When people see me in public, I think they probably are like,
just two little white lines right around your neck.
Yes. but that's kind of how I know baseball is in a true form. So my first spring training covering the Cardinals, that is of actual full normal spring training, which sounds very weird to say This is my third year on the beat. But things are great. Cardinals games start on Saturday. And before you know it, we'll be back in St. Louis for opening day. So time flies,
What's your
right?
favorite part? I actually really enjoy spring training because you can, like, the types of stories you can do and the types of conversations you can do with players. You can have weirder conversations, ask weirder questions, and there's a little bit more of a relaxed vibe. Has that been your experience? Have you enjoyed any sort of stranger conversations, or you just sort of get in the lay of the land right now?
It's a little bit of both. I think the Cardinals are one of those teams where they come into spring so serious and it's like, do not mess around. This is prep for the regular season. So we're taking it just as seriously, but there have been some pretty absurd conversations that I have overheard. And at this point though, I've just kind of learned to tune out these conversations because it will send me down a rabbit hole, but it has been fun to just kind of go around and see, especially for like the live BP settings, we're allowed to be pretty close. We're allowed to be on the field. So to hear the interactions between those guys as teammates, the curse words that may or may not slip out when a pitcher brushes one of his own players back on accident, things like that. It reminds me a lot of like the simplicities of baseball. So that's been really fun.
Yeah, that was a fun thing. It was Miles Michaelis buzzed Tyler O'Neill. And yep. What did he say afterwards?
He let out an, oh shit. And right past Tyler. Poor Tyler, 3 days in a row, has had it up and in because he's like the first guy facing these guys. And every single time, he's like, oh, chin music. I think he's getting a little tired.
But then didn't he say something like, what's up, Canada, afterwards?
I think he did. That actually does sound right.
Yeah, so at least a little bit of fun is being had. The AL West has not been a lot of fun for most of the competitors other than the Astros recently. But let's start at the top with the Angels. We're going to go alphabetically. The Angels, first in our own DVR's heart, we have to do a little shout out here for Derek Van Riper, our normal host. I'm bumbling along trying to approximate even 50% of what he can do. He is the proud father of a new young baby boy, and they are resting. Well, I wouldn't say resting. There's a lot of crying and not much sleeping, but that's what they're up to right now. And I'm shout out to Derek and hope everything's all right over there. I'm gonna bring by a little gift soon here from the Athletic head HQ. We got a future subscriber onesie. He always, you know, his whole thing with the Angels was he felt like every year he sort of bought into the hype and you know, he could cross his eyes and see a future for the Angels. And it's not that hard when you're talking about a team that has two of the top, 10 players in the league in Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout. But, you know, it's always a question of depth you know, all those other pieces. Is there enough there in your estimation for the Angels, or what part of the what hole will show up in the ship and sink this ship this year?
I'm glad you know where I'm going with this. You know, I mean, if you've listened to this podcast every now and then, you'd probably hear me as the local Angels hater. I refuse to be excited about them, not because they don't have exciting players, obviously they do, but because it's the same story every single time. So for me, when I'm looking at the Angels, do I think that they're going to compete for the AL West? I don't. I mean, look at, they have the World Series winning team in their division. They have the Mariners who are up and coming. We'll get to the Rangers. Do I think that they'll be interesting to watch? Of course, with a healthy Ohtani and a healthy Trout, anything is interesting. But I think when you're looking at the biggest questions of establishing a successful season up to the Angel status, like, I think it's pretty fair to say that an Angel successful season looks vastly different than a Mariner successful season. The two biggest questions I have for the Angels is Anthony Rendon going to be healthy this year? And I think I shared that question with the overwhelming majority of baseball. And two, how's the rotation? Because you're looking at the heart of the order for the Angels, and we'll run it down from the two hole. We have Trout, Ohtani, Rendon if he's healthy, Hunter Renfroe and Brandon Drury. That's a pretty respectable middle of the order, but that's only half of the game, obviously. And I think the big concerns for me is after Ohtani on the other side, is that Angels rotation going to be enough to give this heart of the order at least a shot to produce or have their production even matter?
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, we've shined the spotlight a lot at shortstop in the past, and we've faith casted probably every free agent shortstop onto these Angels so far, and they've decided to kind of go with the flotsam and jetsam approach. I don't know, that might be unfair, but I mean, with all the possible free agents that could have signed in Anaheim, the depth chart now reads Luis Renjifo, Giovanni Urshela, David Fletcher, Anthony Velasquez. I think Velasquez might be the only true shortstop of the four, and defensively. Offensively, there's things that all of them do sort of well. And you know, Fletcher is an extreme contact guy, and Urshela is okay contact with okay power, and Renjifo has some power, but I just don't know that I see them and any of them defensively, and we're going to see a little bit more importance on defense this year with the shifting rules. So I'm interested to see how that goes. But yes, Rendon is the guy that stretches it from a true, I would say, if I was planning for this team, I'd be afraid of Mike Trout. I'd be afraid of Shohei Ohtani. I'd be afraid of Taylor Ward to some extent. And I'd be afraid Hunter Renfroe takes me deep. And then you get the bottom of the lineup where I'm not as afraid. But if Rendon, you stick in there, that's just, it extends the lineup another one. It makes it a little bit harder to pitch to. So I think that is an issue. In this rotation, I see Tyler Anderson as a, you know, competent pitcher. I think Patrick Sandoval, I don't like his fastball. I don't think it's very good, but, you know, I think he's at least competent. Reed Detmers showed something with a new slider late last year. So, you know, four deep, you're doing pretty well, except that Ohtani means that you, like, pretty much have to go six in this rotation. And that's going to put pressure on young guys like Chase Silth. That name just, I don't know what it is about that name. I cannot say it. Chase Silseth.
That's a tricky one in your defense.
It's one of the, it's like a tongue twister. Mm-hmm. Tucker Davidson, who came over, Griffin Canning. I mean, it's a bunch of young guys that are untested, and one of them, no, two of them have to pitch.
Correct.
Like from day one. Like, it's not even, that's the kind of thing when you look at that, the back end of that rotation, it's the kind of thing where you're like, oh, they've got five, and then these are the guys behind the five.
Right.
Except these guys are in the six. And then another thing that pops out at me too is when I just look at the Fangraphs projections for this team, is they've got the worst projected bullpen. It's the worst.
30 out of 30? Amazing.
Wow. It's 30 out of 30. They're actually okay with the rotation and say it's sort of an upper half rotation, which if everything goes right, I could see it, I guess. But they do not like that bullpen. And this has not been a team in the past that has done a great job at finding guys in the bullpen. You know, there are teams like the Rays that seem to just you know, create new ace relievers every year. This has not been what the Angels have done. On the flip side, like, if there is hope, like, you kind of want, like, what if someone was, if there was somebody who was going to step forward this year that hadn't really done it before? Is there a younger player on this team, or is it just still Rendon, or is there anybody who catches your eye as being like, man, if this person has a really great year, it could be really big for the Angels?
You know, I don't necessarily think of Taylor Ward as being a young guy, but mm-hmm. I do think he can be a game changer. I mean, you mentioned how Rendon can lengthen the lineup. I think Taylor Ward can easily do that as well from the leadoff spot. You can pitch around guys if you have two or three big bats in that lineup. Opposing pitchers can pitch around that pretty successfully. But if you have guys like Taylor Ward or a Brandon Drury, those are guys that lengthen that lineup and make that even more difficult. And there's not a lot of holes for them to avoid. So, again, I think the advantage for the Angels, if they're going to be successful relative to their terms, is going to be they're going to have to hit their way to it, which is why I think Taylor Ward's performance, especially at the top of the order, setting the table for guys like Trout and Ohtani, is really imperative.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to do a deep pull here. It's not going to be I don't think I mean it as in this guy alone will make the difference. but it's representative of what I think they need, which is they have a guy, Zach Weiss, who came over. And, you know, he's a 30-year-old reliever that was last seen in Seattle. You know, he's had some issues with command. But he has great stuff. I mean, he got swinging strikes on almost 17% of the pitches he threw last year. You know, great strikeout stuff. They need guys like that. I mean, if this is projected to be the worst bullpen in baseball, they need guys like Zach Weiss. They need somebody to be like, who? And that person needs to suddenly be one of the top, you know, 15 relievers in the AL, you know? Somebody that just steps forward and has a great year. Because Estevez, Jimmy Herjett, you know, Matt Moore, Aaron Loop, they're credible guys. They need someone to step out of nowhere into the limelight and be an amazing reliever. I think that could be really huge for this team. So, you know, if things go right, I think we know what the story is. It's going to be health. Maybe one of these, you know, like one or two or three starting pitchers in general just step forward. But what you know what it looks like when it goes bad, right?
Yeah, I think we've had about a decade of that lately.
Just re-rack what's happening every time. Maybe they're due. I mean, that's a gambler's fallacy, but maybe they're due, you know? Like this, one year they got to have everything go right. So I think the one thing I do like about what they've done is in, you know, signing guys like Brett Phillips and Brandon Drury and getting Gio Urshela there, they are a little bit more set up against injury on the hitting side. You know what I mean? I feel like if somebody gets hurt for a little bit, you know, they have guys that can step forward, particularly on the infield. They go too deep with credible major leaguers at every position on the infield.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. I would agree that they are a more versatile ball club than I was expecting them to be over the winter. I think there is some opportunity for some flexibility and for a team that does have, I mean, every team has their fair share of injury problems, but we've been talking about Rendon being injured for, what, 2 years? Having mm-hmm. some infield flexibility and some depth there certainly doesn't hurt. I'll give the Angels a plus one there. And, you know, look, it's not like they went out there and didn't have a good offseason. They got the upgrades and went out and incrementally upgraded the team in the best ways they knew possible. It's not going to be enough, and I don't think anyone was really expecting that, but at least there are certain areas where Angels fans can kind of take a deep breath and say, okay, there is some flexibility here. We do have some versatility here. There is some mm-hmm. depth. There is somewhat of a game plan if things start to inevitably go sideways.
Yeah, and maybe some young names. Silthus himself actually has a pretty filthiest splitter. Oh man, that's a whole sentence that I'm gonna screw up like eight different ways. So Griffin Canning has a really good breaking ball if he can be healthy. So there are some young arms, and those are the guys that'll take him further. Alphabetically, we move on. The next team in the AL West. Oh, look at this, our champion Astros.
0-100, real quick.
Yeah. I don't even know how to set this up so much because they just are seem like such a juggernaut. And every time that we've said, oh, this person is leaving and this person is leaving, I guess I'm going to put it this way. How much is the Justin Verlander departure going to hurt this team? Do you think they have what it takes to overcome that that issue, that letting him go? There's a really good stable of pitchers, but do you think that is going to be finally the one where you're like, oh, maybe they really should have kept him?
Yes. The Astros do have a pretty stable core in their starting rotation. Losing Justin Verlander is still losing Justin Verlander. He's one of those rare types of pitchers where there is just not a replacement unless your name is maybe Jacob DeGrom, but that's for a different team in the division.
Right, yeah.
I like the Astros rotation. I like pretty much everything about the Astros, but that's no bold proclamation considering, you know, they just won the World Series. So not exactly a hot take. But what I did notice about the rotation for the Astros, so they had four starters who are pitching in the World Baseball Classic this year. That's Framber Valdez, Christian Javier, Luis Garcia, and Jose Urquidy. Those same four guys all reached career highs in innings pitched last year. If you add the regular season and the postseason Obviously the Astros went very deep into the postseason. So you're counting on these guys to go out there and perform high leverage innings in March. And this is no mark on the World Baseball Classic. I'm a huge proponent of the World Baseball Classic.
I know, but it's
but it's something to keep timing. In mind, right?
Isn't it weird timing? I mean, some of these guys are coming to camp throwing 80% of what they can throw right now.
Exactly. So that is what has me slightly reserved about the rotation is the innings limit. I mean, you're asking these guys to come out here already on short rest after pitching in an international tournament after they just, all four of them, established career highs last season in innings pitched.
Yeah, we just got some bad news that Lance McCullers Jr. had a forearm strain that he's going to have to sit down from and rehab. And he thinks he might not be there for the beginning of the season. There's some opportunity here. Hunter Brown is a really exciting young pitcher. He looks almost identically like Justin Verlander.
There's
and has built his game on him. However, he's just shorter than Justin Verlander, and I'm not here to shame anyone for being short, especially someone like Hunter Brown, who's exactly the same height as I am. But that does have some meaning that his ball doesn't, come out at the exact same place as Justin Verlander. He doesn't have the exact same movement as Justin Verlander, but he does have a 91 mile an hour slider. And actually his best pitch is his power curve. So, there's a lot to like about Hunter Brown, but it is interesting to bring out this other stuff because, teams use 7 starters every year heavily. And they use 10 starters on average throughout the year. So with Lance McCullers down, you're putting Hunter Brown in that rotation. Now you're asking those other four guys to pitch, pretty hardcore early in the March for them. What if one of them goes down? Now you're asking maybe Forrest Whitley to step in, who was a top prospect but has had some really rough command and health issues.
Right, has his own injuries history as well. So it's not like he really goes into that rotation if he gets there as an arm that they're 100% super confident about.
Yeah, and they don't have what they used to have in the past, like guys like Jake Odorizzi or whatever. They don't have like a glue veteran that might be in the bullpen if everyone's healthy or, in the starting rotation when they need them. They're missing that.
They lack that swingman, that six-man swingman that seemingly almost every team in contention has.
Yeah. I mean, you're looking at wanting to find a way to get a sixth starter on your active roster just so you can paper over, just missing a start, or you want to push a guy and give him an extra day of rest or whatever it is. They don't have that fungible arm, I don't think. So a little bit of an issue there. They also just happen to have maybe their own sort of angels duo of two of the best 10, 15 hitters in baseball in Yordan Alvarez and Kyle Tucker. Kyle Tucker is actually pretty set up to take advantage of a lot of the new rule changes. He hits a fair amount of balls to the pool side as a lefty and is also, fast, but not elite fast. I think he could really benefit from the bigger bases and the throws over. So totally could have a 30-30 season from him. Could have a 340 homer season from Yordan Alvarez if the knees stay completely healthy. So that's their rock. And then all the guys they produced over the years, Altuve, Bregman, Pena, McCormick, that's their depth. They add Jose Abreu. I mean, offensively, I don't know where to poke any holes in this offense.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I have zero concerns about this Astros lineup. It's very rare that you look at a complete 1-9 lineup in baseball and think, okay, that is pretty much maximized as best as it could be. But that's how I feel about this Astros lineup. I mean, you hit on everyone. You look at that heart of the order, you're seeing Bregman, Alvarez. I love the addition of Abreu and Kyle Tucker, like you mentioned. And then Jeremy Pena, superstar of the postseason last year. Yeah. I mean, everywhere you look, that there's no really easy guaranteed out 1-9 in that lineup.
Yeah, no, I mean Martin Maldonado maybe, but like every team's got. Sorry, I didn't mean to be rude to Martin. I mean, he's a, you know, in fact, what's important about this is Martin Maldonado, a really good arm, really good game caller. Pitchers really love throwing to him, really good framer. So just really someone that does everything but hit. And they're fine with that. Even where they have some, you know, is Chaz McCormick really going to repeat? Is he, you know, how good of a center fielder he is? They do have their old Jake Myers, you know, maybe recovering a little bit more from his shoulder injury and coming back. So there, you know, there's something there for them, even in the places where they're in trouble. Mauricio Dubon is a great utility guy that's going to help them up the middle. So I think that they have some versatility baked in. In the bullpen, you know, Presley's knee made him look a little human last year. But they are the team like the Rays that just pump out other guys. So even if Presley's knee hurts or his velo goes down, Rafael Montero has been a total revelation for them. Brian Abreu is the closer in waiting. Hector Neris and Ryan Stanek are these guys that are super wild but have super great stuff. So, you know, it's, they go five deep in the bullpen. I think the only real, question mark for us on this is rotation health.
I agreed.
Yeah. It's kind of hard sometimes to talk about the best teams. It's like,
no, good. What are we going to say? They're good.
They're still good.
They're good.
Really good. Okay. They're good. Okay.
All right, then.
Yeah. On to the next.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be a foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, nanoarthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely, minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary Nano Experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary.
And next up are the Oakland A's.
And where... right back to zero. Here we go.
Yeah. Easier to talk about.
That's fair.
we're being snarky and we are laughing, but let's say something nice about the Oakland Athletics first. You go first.
Oh, man. I feel like you did that on purpose.
Okay. Yeah,
I did. Thank you so much. Look, I say this as a Bay Area native who spent most of her childhood going to Coliseum games because it was way cheaper than going to what was then AT&T Park. What I like about the A's, I think Tony Kemp is a great leader.
Yeah, he's a really nice guy.
No, there's that. I mean, it's a rough time to be an Oakland A's fan. I get it. Whether you're looking at the roster projection, the starting lineup projection, or the projection of where the team could end up regarding its geographical location, there's just not really a lot to be excited about. Something the A's, and even when you look at their farm system, it's ranked pretty low. I don't know. Maybe Ramon Laureano can have a really stellar first half and they trade him for some more prospects. You know, look, one of the games that we like to play in spring, the St. Louis Scribes and I, is we look at the Cardinals on the backfields and the various live BPs going on. And we say to ourselves, where would that guy pitch if he was an Oakland A? Like, what number starter would be as he's fighting to break camp, if he's fighting to break the rotation, where would he be? And I think the Cardinals have two or three players alone on their spring training in spring training backfields that would be at least a two or three for the current Oakland A's rotation.
I'm going to push back a little bit.
Okay, let's debate.
And I'm not going to go to my model numbers or anything like that. I'm actually going to just point out that I think that they have starting pitcher depth.
Okay.
This is why it's only pushing out a little bit. You might be right about the relative quality and they could slot in. However, I think the A's have at least amassed like 7 or 8 number threes and number fours in a rotation.
I would agree with that.
So they have a lot of guys. And if I want to be more positive, I do actually think Shintaro Fujinami, I think there's something about his game that could translate better to the American game, in that he's a high stuff, low command guy. And we're pretty comfortable with that in America. And like, I think that we, like, in terms of coaching and getting the most out of him, there we might be able to help Shintaro Fujinami be maybe a little bit better than people expect. And anyone who's like throws 99 with a devastating splitter, like, I'm gonna say has decent upside. And the other guy, Ken Waldichuk, I think has 3 really good pitches, has top of the rotation upside. So those are my two guys that I think, you know, on talent alone, would slot in at 1 and 2. But then, yeah, guys like Blackburn, Caprellian, I think even Mueller, Sears, you know, Martinez, you know, I think a lot of those guys are depth in a way that they are set up to have depth, and then also maybe provide depth to other teams. I mean, you're right. You think, oh, well, Paul Blackburn had a pretty good season. Where's he going? And that's the real sad truth about being in Oakland. For me, it's a bizarre feeling. You know, we're talking about spring and, you know, walking into these clubhouses. I think for you, there must be a real sense of continuity from season to season. I mean, especially with guys like Adam Wainwright, you've lost a little bit of that with Yadier not being there this year. But, you know, there's the same people every year and you get to build these relationships. I feel like, you know, walking into the A's clubhouse is a lesson in speed dating. I have to get to know them very quickly, and they'll be gone very quickly.
Exactly. No, and that's really hard when you're a fan too. How do you build these connections with these players in this organization when it's like a constant revolving door? You walk into the Cardinals clubhouse and, I mean, their 2023 team is almost identical to their 2022 team, which is very similar to their 2021 team. But I want to be positive for Oakland. I think Oakland A's fans are some of the most passionate and interesting fans in baseball. They're incredibly loyal, but it just looks like being positive, overwhelmingly positive about the A's seems so far off on the horizon right now. I don't see that changing in 2023 or 2024.
Yeah, and it's interesting to wonder just you know, if some of the innovations around the rest of baseball just haven't taken hold, if the A's are falling behind a little bit there. I know that they are trying to reorganize some of the interaction between technology and player development. That's some place that I think they've fallen pretty far behind, and I know that. They also just see things a little differently. I mean, I think the Asturi-Ruiz trade was a fascinating look into how different front offices can value the same player very differently. I mean, it's pretty obvious that different front offices evaluate Ruiz differently because he's been traded like three times, you know? Mm-hmm. So that already says some organizations thought this is a good enough guy to trade, and another organization thought we'll take him on, and then thought we should trade him. So, you know, to have that be the centerpiece for the Sean Murphy trade, a guy who's been offed like, you know, three times traded, that's already weird. And then you have this asterisk that he just doesn't hit the ball hard by like our Statcast metrics in terms of hard hit rate. He was a laggard in the minor leagues, and maybe a lot of his power numbers come from his legs because he's very fast. However, at the same time, we're heading into a new league with regards to stealing bases and the rules about throwing over and everything. If there is somebody that could steal 80 bases next year and be allowed to take off as much as he wants because maybe the team isn't that great, I think Ruiz could be an easy guy to lead the league in steals. I don't know if he'll have a 300 OBP. I don't know if he'll have a 400 slugging. I don't know if he's a star the way that maybe the A's front office thinks. But I do think he's going to be maybe the most fascinating person to watch on the A's this year. Is there anybody else you're keeping your eye on in this roster that could be interesting?
You know, I didn't really. Well, one, I do agree that fascinating is a good word for the Ruiz trade because I love the trade for the Braves. I love the trade for the Brewers. And I was intrigued.
That can't be good. You can't love the trade for three teams.
I was really intrigued for the A's.
Intrigued with the last part, yeah.
But when I'm looking at the A's, I'm thinking about a trade they just did when they traded AJ Puck to the Marlins for JJ Bleday. And to me, I don't think that trade like really moves the needle for either team. But I'm wondering what they saw in Bleday, who didn't really have a clear-cut spot with the Marlins, to trade Puck. Maybe because it comes back to what you mentioned with the starting pitching depth. I mean, AJ Puck was once a top valued prospect. Now he's reunited in Miami with another former A's top prospect in Jesús Luzardo. For me, I'm wondering what they think and what they saw in JJ Bleday where they think he can be successful. If they saw something metrics wise, if they saw something in the data where they were comfortable giving away someone who was at one point relatively prized in the organization to take someone that it didn't seem like the Marlins really valued or had a place for.
Yeah, and I think that the through line between both of these is a reliance on actual results in the minor leagues versus other teams valuing process in the minor leagues more. And a way I can explain this is if you look at what Bleday did at AAA last year and you say, okay, he was 23% better than league average in AAA as a 24-year-old. He walked 16% of the time. He struck out 27% of the time. He slugged 470. If you group him with other players that did these things in the minor leagues, they are successful X percent of the time. Puck is a reliever for us. You know, that selling a reliever to get a X percent chance at a credible major leaguer based on his AAA stats is something we believe in. That, I think, makes a lot of sense if you think about the way the A's work.
Sure.
They get a lot of guys out of AAA. AAA numbers do translate better to the majors than AA or high A. They don't bother with high A. There was a trade, Luis Castillo, for like 2-16, 17, you know, mm-hmm. they got that guy's like, you know, they got Nuelvi Marte, you know, who's like in high A, you know. The A's could have done a trade like that. Instead, they traded for, you know, Shea Langeliers and, you know, guys that have higher floors and are higher, you know, are closer to the major leagues and are more projectable, you would call it. But the same thing, you could look at Bleday the same way you look at Ruiz and say, you know, the hardest hit ball he hit this year was 107.9. That's below average. If you look at his barrel rate, it was okay, but it wasn't good for a slugger. So, you know, we have some process numbers and they have those process numbers for the minor leagues where they can say they can look at their exit velocities minor leagues. We can't. But what I'm guessing is he's overproduced his exit velocities and they think, no, he's got something figured out. He knows how to hit and he's projectable and he's worth that chance. So, I mean, I think it's a look into what they're doing. I mean, one thing that I do like about what they've done so far is getting somebody like Shea Langeliers back in one of their trades as a future linchpin up the middle. I think he's very smart and he's going to be a very good catcher. And I do like actually acquiring all this starting pitcher depth, because I do think that, especially on trade deadline day, what is the number one thing that people seem to want?
It's starting pitching. I mean, you can find anything that you want at the trade deadline except starting pitching. It has consistently been the highest valued position. The market is always favoring the sellers at the trade deadline regardless, because at that point, teams that are willing to trade are usually desperate to win. And we've seen the demand for starting pitchers at the trade deadline. I mean, look, thinking back to 2022 when the Cardinals traded for Jordan Montgomery and Jose Quintana, that elevated their season.
But, you know, it's not like it came without a cost. A starting center fielder in the major leagues is
a gold glover, right?
Yeah. So, and then I think of like the Yankees trying to get A's pitchers, you know, two years out of four or whatever, giving up some assets, none that have really moved the needle yet, although I do like Waldichuk, and the Yankees getting almost nothing for it with the news with Frankie Montas's shoulder and Sonny Gray just having just a terrible time there. So, I think the A's have set themselves up to be sellers in terms of starting pitching. That's a decent thing. But they're just, to me, they're just very bad offensively up the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And to some extent, that includes Langlier's got some things he can do, and Ruiz does too. But like, especially on the infield, I don't see a solution coming. I don't see a shortstop of the future on this roster. Especially now with the shift rules, I think they're going to have to play Kemp. I don't think they can play Jordan Diaz or any of the other guys over there. They've been trying to hide some, you know, kind of almost first baseman at second base in the past, and I don't think they can do that anymore with the shift rules. So I just don't see the infield coming together, really. And that's where I would start building myself. I feel like outfielder is a little bit easier to find, and I would want to have building blocks on the infield.
Agreed. So that's I would little... agree. Even with Nick Allen, I'm still not
He's overly a good defensive guy.
Yeah, I'm still not overly positive about, well, really a lot of the A's, but the middle infield.
Yeah, and the sad news is brass tacks, they project as the worst team in the American League. Above average, really comfortably above average, only at Ramon Laureano and Shea Langelier's positions. So that's two places that they can maybe build upon in the future. But I know Ramon wouldn't mind being traded out. So I asked him about it last year. I said something vague like, man, there's nobody here, you know. And I think I meant in the clubhouse, because it was like after the trade deadline. And he took it to mean nobody in the stands. And his response was classic. It was great. Yes, I've taken up coffee.
Oh, not what you want. That is not what you want to hear.
He said, I'm getting really into coffee. And he showed me his coffee maker, his espresso maker he takes on the road. And like,
yikes. That should be the slogan for the A's. Bring your coffee to the Coliseum. Up coffee.
Oh, man. All right. Next up on our list of previews in the AL West, we've got the Mariners.
That's good.
They're
spicy.
A fun team. Yeah,
they are very fun.
They, you know, one thing I like about the Mariners is as much as you can take the A's to task for moving their players around so much, the Mariners, I get a little bit more of a hint of a plan, at least a short-term plan to get ready and be good now.
Yep.
So it's Trader Jerry DePoto at the top of the front office leading this charge, and they've acquired Colton Wong and Teoscar Hernandez this offseason. They've added Luis Castillo at the trade deadline last year, and then AJ Pollock. Let me not forget him. And then their farm system has been really good at developing pitchers most recently. Which one of these new additions to the Mariners do you think is most crucial? I'm going to take Luis Castillo back off that offering for you.
Okay.
Real quick. I'm talking about just this offseason. None of them are really big names, although maybe Teoscar is, and maybe that's the right answer. But is there somebody that do you think is going to be crucial for this team?
I'm torn between Teoscar and Colton for different reasons. I mean, Colton Wong has been one of the most consistent second base defenders at second base over the entirety of his career. I think he can really stabilize that middle infield, but Teoscar Hernandez represented a big need that the Mariners needed in the outfield. And I think he completely transforms, and we talked about this with the Angels. He lengthens that lineup, which already has Julio Rodriguez, Eugenio Suarez, and again, AJ Pollock, like you mentioned. I think the Mariners were very smart about their offseason. I think they went out and they didn't get the splashiest of names, but they got the pieces that really fit what they were going to build for. I don't know if the Mariners can hold off the Astros in the AL West. I don't know if the Mariners can win the division. I do firmly believe that if the Mariners put themselves in a position to again be a legitimate playoff team, that can go long. So for me, again, it may not be the blockbuster names that Mariners fans were hoping for, but I thought they both, Wong and Teoscar Hernandez, were smart, efficient upgrades that really brought exactly what the Mariners were looking for and solidified those needs early.
Yeah, yeah. I think that there's a sneaky chance that Pollock is super important, and not because, but basically the same reasoning as you're giving about lengthening the lineup, but Teoscar, in a way, replaces Mitch Haniger, who, you know, I think... You know, maybe Teoscar, he's got more batted ball power. Mitch might have a slightly better plate approach. I think that favors Teoscar, but maybe not by a ton. Pollock is important for me because I do believe that the back end of this lineup gets a little iffy sometimes. And, you know, if there's no step forward from J.P. Crawford, you've got... He's a steady Eddie Oatmeal type, but he's not a great step. He's not a great offensive piece. And then Jared Kelenic, he needs a really big step forward to become even an average offensive piece, I believe. And so that's two positions that aren't normally negatives. Now, Julio Rodriguez being a center fielder that's so great offensively, that does put them ahead of the game. Maybe they can afford J.P. Crawford to be just whatever he is, you know? And Cal Raleigh is actually a decent offensive catcher. I have him pegged to break out a little bit more because he really improved his swinging strike rate over the course of the season, just got better, and he already barrels the ball. So if he can make any contact, he could be better. But, you know, there's not a lot of teams that just have like a zero in left field. Like offensively, it's usually a place that you find somebody that can play, that can hit, and you put them there. Pollock kind of stepping forward or just regressing to better days, or Jared Kelenic taking a step forward. That to me seems like a bit of a it seems dramatic to say it this way, but a bit of an open wound. It's like when I look at this depth chart, I'm like, yes, yes, yeah. Oh. Left field, what are we doing here?
No, and I think that's fair. I think that's fair based on what we talked about, really, about how they're projected to be a legitimate playoff team. But playoff teams can get exposed if you have that one weakness. But one thing I do really like about the Mariners is their top three of the rotation. Right now, if you look at the fan graphs and their projections of the starters, the Mariners have three starters that are projected to have a sub-4 ERA and post 170-plus innings this year. Though that is Luis Castillo, Logan Gilbert, and Robbie Ray. And as we've learned in our journey through the postseasons over the years, teams with solid starting pitching will make it farther than teams without it. And obviously you have Luis Castillo, an established ace there. I like what Logan Gilbert's done. I like Robbie Ray here. And you're looking at other guys in their rotation too. I know George Kirby and Marco Gonzalez may not move that needle all that often, but when you have those three guys that I mentioned with the projections that they do, you suddenly feel a little bit more confident that if you're looking at a playoff team, you have the guys that you want to consistently be able to toe the rubber. Mariners were a really good team last year. To be a good team in the playoffs, you have to have surefire starting pitching, and I do think they have that at the top of their rotation.
Yes, I absolutely love this starting rotation, and I think that the Fangraphs actually doesn't have it really correctly. They've got them as sort of a middling starting rotation. I don't see that at all.
I don't either.
I see this as a top rotation, and I think part of that is Luis Castillo is in undergoing a little bit of a transition from a changeup sinker guy to a fastball, a four-seam slider guy, but he has all four in his bag. And he's been so consistent. And I know that he's not ever necessarily a guy that has popped for the Cy Young, But if you're consistently a top 10 or top 15 pitcher, that has a lot of value too, and that's just a lot to bank on. I can bank on Luis Castillo. If I want upside, I think Logan Gilbert and George Kirby have it in spades. Logan Gilbert has a really, really good fastball, and he's tinkering with it. He came to camp with a new splitter, and he's always got a new slider, but one of those is gonna really tick and feed into that fastball, and he can be a power pitcher. He loves Justin Verlander, and I think, you know, there's some chance that he becomes a Justin Verlander type. He has that good of a fastball. And then George Kirby is Aaron Nola for me. He's got amazing command. He's elite command like Aaron Nola. He has developed a breaking ball like Aaron Nola. He's not an exact in terms of mechanics or looks, but it is that sort of elite command with developing stuff profile that I think is a top of the rotation guy. Now, Robbie Ray and Marco Gonzalez are your veterans, and I think that they're fine for what you need them to be. And then we talked about having a swingman on your roster. Chris Flexen is that guy where he's going to be in the pen, or he's going to do some starts, and he's just going to be there.
Would you say he could Flexen between the roles?
Yes, right. Oh man, that was right there for me. But and then even have Emerson Hancock as a young guy that can come up and if someone gets hurt. So I think that, and then that relief squad is nasty.
I'm looking at those guys, man. I'm looking at guys like Andres Munoz, like Diego Castillo. Like, these are guys that I think through all the teams that we've talked about in this division, I would give the advantage to the overall pitching staff to Seattle, no question.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, yeah, I mean, to pick anybody over the Astros, you know, you get a little sweaty under the collar. But, I mean, Andres Munoz, 100 miles an hour with a 90-mile-an-hour slider. Paul Sewald is the funkiest pitcher on any of these rosters, and nobody can seem to see him right. Diego Castillo throws real hard. Matt Brash is coming to town this year with a cutter, which will help him even if he's in the pen. Penn Murphy is this weird sidearm guy. I mean, I actually love this bullpen so much. I actually went and visited them when they were in Modesto. And so I got to know much of this pen in Modesto. And they just fit together so well, and they really liked each other, and they liked the starting pitchers. And I think there's a little bit – you remember when the Royals came up and they just had all been in the minor leagues together?
Yes.
You know, I don't think that I get that feeling so much on the hitting side for the Mariners, but I definitely get that from the pitchers where Logan knows what Kirby's up to, you know. And we'll make a comment about, you know, oh, have you seen what Kirby's doing with the slider, you know? All these guys are talking to each other and rooting for each other and have known each other for a while. So there's that. So, okay, I'm with you, man. Best pitching staff in the AL West. Soup to nuts, as they might say. The lineup, I'm going to have to see how Colton Wong deals that, you know, one of the things that is so tough too, is this park is a little bit of an issue. I think park plus injury kind of chewed up Jesse Winker last year.
Sure.
And, it's done it to other players too. So every time you kind of bring a new player here, you're a little bit nervous. Like, can Colton Wong still get his 10, 15 homers and you know, be a plus offensively? You know, he also was one of the largest drops in year-to-year defensive stats I've ever seen. And the other was J.P. Crawford. So there's this weird thing where up the middle last year, the Mariners' two guys were rated really poorly, like bottom of the league by like outs above average, the Savant stat. And so... But that's weird because, you know, what would happen from one year to the next? Their sprint speeds weren't that different. They seemed athletically fine. So, you know, I think that might be some noise, but it is something I wanted to mention. But overall, this is a fun squad. You know, if Jared Kelnick gets it together, that's going to be a huge thing. And that, you know, we've been talking about this team to team a little bit, right? Like, if there is one guy who could step forward on this team, it's Jared Kelnick,
the
one. Right?
That's your X factor right there. If you're Seattle,
I mean, if he steps forward, everything looks different. Now they have credible major league offensive and defensive like guys at every position. They have some, you know, flexibility with Dylan Moore. They've got, you know, they've got everything they need. But without him, it's just what does that back end of that lineup look like? So fascinated to see what his season looks like. I wouldn't say that I have that much hope for him, but you know, he's come to town with a new swing. It is that time of year. Everyone's got a new swing.
Something new.
But I think that hidden within that for him is something interesting, is that is a sign that he's struggled enough to listen. And I have seen young players get to that point where they struggle enough to really listen, and that can be a real chance to improve.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB show.
All right. We come to the bottom of the, and it's not the bottom, hopefully in the standings for them, considering how much money they spent, but the last of our teams that we're doing in the AL West, because we're doing it by the alphabet, the Texas Rangers up now. And I might put it simply to you, And the secret here is there was no rundown, so she has no idea what I'm about to say.
No, it's a secret.
Yes, this is excellent TV and radio. Did they get their money's worth?
That's a much better question than what I wrote for Texas, which at the very top of my notebook is: are the Rangers good?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the same question.
But it's yours is phrased in a way that makes you sound intelligent. Mine's like, okay. I don't know. Okay, well, this is such a loaded question because so much has to go right. I mean, let's give them their credit. They spent the money to get better. They spent a large amount of money to get better. It seems almost too simple to say that Jacob deGrom being a healthy Jacob deGrom is going to be what makes them good. It certainly is going to be the leading factor. I mean, you don't sign a guy to a five-year, $185 million deal for him to not be able to take the ball every 5 days and not be able to do that as your top of the arm rotation. But I'm looking at the other names in this rotation. Martin Perez had a great year for them last year. That's someone that they didn't want to trade at the trade deadline, despite how many teams having interest. They got John Gray. They have Nathan Eovaldi and Andrew Heaney. It's formidable. You can, that kind of rotation can hang with a rotation like Houston and Seattle's, I believe. That, again...
In some, is it better? Like, it's if you got 120 innings of DeGrom, is that rotation better than the other ones?
I think you need a little more from DeGrom. I think you do. I would say maybe 140, and that would be a baseline. I mean, it's a great rotation, I think, through and through. It's pretty solid, but it's no secret who they're relying on to be their ace. And there's a lot of teams with a number one that isn't necessarily an ace. They may refer to them as their team's ace, but when you're looking at what makes an ace-caliber pitcher, that's Jacob deGrom. So for me, the first thing that we need to establish about the Rangers is Jacob deGrom going to be that premier top pitcher in baseball for them, top five pitcher in baseball for them?
Yeah. But I think the other main question is their farm system going to produce, I think mostly bats. that can fill in the gap, because they put a lot of pressure on this roster with the acquisitions in terms of you need some cheap guys too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to get into the politics of baseball spending, but I don't think there's a team that spends as much as they've spent up the middle everywhere in their lineup. And I mean, the Mets might be close, but like, I don't know if that's on the table for the Rangers. So if that's not on the table for the Rangers in terms of, you know, spending really big at every position, they really kind of need Leody Taveras take a small step forward. They need Josh Jung to be a cheap third baseman for them, even if he's not a superstar, to be a league average player on the league minimum, you know, to prove for Nate Lowe to prove that last year's second half, where he was so much better than he was in the first half, to prove that was real.
Yeah.
For Jonah Heim to prove that what he did last year was real.
You see guys like Robbie Grossman's been in the league for a long time. Is he going to blow the box score open? No. But if he can be league average, then you suddenly feel a lot better, just like you said about multitudes of those guys, about the overall length of your lineup and the depth of your lineup. Because you look at guys like Corey Seager and Marcus Semien leading the top of the lineup. Yes, they had some pretty significantly low batting averages in their career last year at the top of the order, but they're still getting on base. They're still slugging home runs. That only works, though, if you have length throughout the rest of the lineup instead of just your one and two. You can't consistently rely on your top two guys to produce all of your offensive numbers. So I would agree that those guys that you mentioned and the younger, cheaper talent, if you will, needs to be able to produce consistently because if you're Steve Cohen, you basically can't really just keep spending money and getting these ridiculous contracts and hoping that it'll all click together at one point.
Yeah. You know, some of the what's interesting to me is that I don't really like the plate approaches for some of their guys. Adolis Garcia is a kind of swing at everything kind of guy, and he's got great power and he's got a great arm and he's useful now. He's definitely not someone I would sign to an extension because, you know, your ability to make contact and pitches outside the zone really ages poorly and he really swings at everything. And then Leody Taveras, you know, interesting plate approach as well. And, you know, Josh Jung, you know, coming off of his shoulder surgery, Jung's, you know, swing strike rate and strikeout rate kind of ballooned. So, you know, I'm hoping that he can make more contact. Otherwise, that gives me kind of three young guys where I'm like, ugh, I don't like the plate skills. So bringing in something like Robbie Grossman, I think, is kind of brilliant in that it gives them kind of lineup diversity, which is something that I believe in that I can't prove, which is I believe that, and this is the way I put it. So 1 year, Adam Dunn and Vlad Guerrero had the same like WOBA or same OPS, right? And so theoretically you're saying these guys are the same. But if I had a lineup full of Adam Dunns and a lineup full of Vlad Guerreros and then a third lineup that was half Adam Dunn and half Vlad Guerrero, I put to you that third lineup would do the best. Because they're fundamentally different guys. You got Adam Dunn up there spitting on everything until he can homer. So he's going to be really good maybe against wild pitchers and waiting for them to make a mistake. But against pinpoint control pitchers, who would you rather have? I'd actually rather have Vlad.
Correct.
Because Vlad can, even if you are hitting your corners, I mean, he hit homers off the bounce. You know, so like,
literally,
you know, he can hit anything. So to me, bringing in Robbie Grossman has a little bit of that. Oh, okay. Seager, Semien, and Grossman are going to give you amazing at bats. They are going to grind through. They're going to walk. They're going to do everything you want a guy to do. And then if we're going up against someone who is just carving us up and just, you know, striking those guys out because they keep taking a ball, low it away, or, you know, this painting, then Adolis Garcia is going to go up there and hit one of those paint jobs out, you know, just because he can, you know. So if I tell myself the story of how these Rangers make it work this year, it's, yes, DeGrom, maybe 150 plus innings, and it has to be shaped correctly where like he's there at the end of the season, you know. You know, maybe need someone in the bullpen to be healthy, like Leclerc and Hernandez are good stuff guys, and Barlow. I like those pitchers. Someone needs to be healthy all year and establish themselves as a closer. That's part of the story. But the other part of the story is that, you know, Jung, Taveras, and Garcia mesh with these veterans and give you the type of lineup that can win games 5-4 and can win games 1-0. And that'll matter, because when Martin Perez is on the bump, you need to win 5-4.
Right.
You know, and when DeGrom is on the bump, you know, DeGrom always goes up against the ace, and the joke in New York was that, like, he couldn't score for himself, you know?
It would be like, Mets lose 2-1.
Yeah, exactly. That was the DeGrom thing. So, you know, having a lineup that can either ground it out and get some walks and do it that way, or just hit one of those random bombs that wins you the game. There's something there that I like. So, you know, and then the overall health of the organization is, I'm just looking at them to start, you know, producing major leaguers, and in a way that I think they can. You know, they have always had good scouting. It's a little bit like, you know, the Cardinals have been really great at producing major leaguers, and then they package them for stars. You know, the Rangers have been a team that has produced major leaguers, but not always for their own squad.
Good point. It's a great point.
But if you were to tell the story of how it doesn't work for the Rangers this year, how does that story go?
Jacob DeGrom's arm falls off in his first live BP and just kind of tailspin from there.
Yeah.
No, I think it comes down to
because
Eovaldi
is going to be hurt. Haney's gotten hurt a lot.
Right. It's such a cliche answer, but health is really going to dictate a lot of this. And guys that you mentioned, like Adolis Garcia, like Josh Young, like Leody Taveras, they do have to mesh and give some of that lineup continuity, if you will. It can't just be the guys that you shelled out these contracts for. It can't just be the Simeon and Seager show. There does need to be some consistent production through those guys later in the lineup to just kind of have some fluidity, I would say. But no, this season, the Rangers season, to me, still, no matter what, is going to ride on the success of Jacob DeGrom. That's just what a pitcher of his caliber does. That's the consequence or the nature of the game. When you have an arm like that, a lot extra comes with it. So for the Rangers, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I'd like to see, just selfishly, I'm such a pitching nerd, you know, there's going to be injuries in this rotation, either DeGrom or not. And I would like to see a young Texas Ranger starting pitcher just blossom. You know, I don't know. Glenn Otto has some nice things. You know, there are some guys in that organization. Jack Leiter was a high pick that, you know, I think has come to camp. I've hearing he's pitching well, but he had such a really terrible year last year, and there hasn't been that development of internal starting pitching I think you see more success stories on the hitting side for their development. I think that developing somebody to step in when those guys are hurt will be huge for them, because they do have Odorizzi. They actually have.
They do. Speaking
the glue guy.
Yeah. I was like, oh, you're looking at that swing guy. You can have Astros didn't have him, but the Rangers sure do.
Yeah, they're going to need him, but I think they might also need a young starting pitcher to step forward. And so that's going to be the story for the AL West this year. We've got it from top to bottom, soup to nuts. And thank you so much, Katie, for helping us out this week. And we look forward to hearing more from you from camp. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do so at theathletic.com/baseball show. And the offer is $2. $2 a month, and for that you can get Katie's excellent writing on the Cardinals, as well as all the fantasy baseball stuff that just came out. The draft kit just came out. I've got 10 young bats that are going to break out. Mr. Lars Nootbaar is one of the 10
media
bats.
media sensation
and thanks so much for listening.